From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Midnight Movie Cowboys for this week. If you're hearing my voice, that's because you have no choice. That rhymed. And this is Stuart here, and over there in Colorado, if you're British, is John Grace. How you going, Johnny?
Howdy. Howdy. It's great to be here.
That's not very British.
I couldn't think of a British-y thing to say. I should be watching some Sid James this weekend.
Oh, I have been absolutely binging to the point where I ran late today, John, because I've been watching Come Dine With Me, the British food show, which I don't know if you've got an American version there. I don't think so.
There's the British version is on. You can buy the seasons, I think, on Amazon, and you can buy them on the stream. And I think there's one of the streaming services that I don't have actually offers it, but I forget which one. One of those.
Okay. Yeah.
So it does exist on our cable services and such.
Oh, nice. It's just that I've been absolutely binging on that and. It's the funniest thing. There's an Australian version of it, but it is absolutely hideous. It's so bad. I watched one episode, 30 minutes, and I was climbing the walls. It was that bad by the end of it.
Is there any time when the Australian remake or spinoff is actually good or better than the original?
Nothing leaps to mind at the moment.
Because you've told me about Love Thy Neighbor getting that extra series in Australia.
Oh, yeah, it's not good.
Tony Hancock doing his time down there.
The Australian special, that was not good. Yeah, but by the time those shows, all those artists have come to Australia, it's long run its course. So there's the gas is out of the tank, if you will. Well, the petrol's out of the tank.
I have a sad thing to add to that is Elvis in his final year was being offered an Australian tour for big money, and he was seriously considering it. And the Colonel was also more than willing, was actually willing to sign on. And he had never done a foreign tour, ever. He had not been out of the country since, that time in the Army and where he was stationed in Germany.
Ain't going to no prison colony, man. I'll sit in a toilet and die instead.
All right, man, they're kind of rednecks like us.
Yeah. All right.
But apparently the cash was really serious, and he was going to go.
Yeah. Oh, well, he didn't quite make it.
No, he did not. Didn't make it out of the bathroom.
He got something down under, but it wasn't himself. It was his turds.
Poor slob. It pretty much ate himself to death.
God, I remember when I went to Graceland with Hunter, and we were plowing through one of the many Elvis cookbooks they had in the merch store. Sound like a trunk there. The merch store in the stores they have there. And oh my god, we just sat there laughing, going, "No wonder this guy ate himself to death." It's like deep fried peanut butter and banana sandwiches. And
yeah, it's that sort of thing that wouldn't be allowed in the industry today. But it's like he had that kind of protected filter or something, or just nobody had made it that big. That quick, I think, in the business at the time.
Yeah.
About health or personal trainers. Those phrases didn't exist.
You called me fat man, big, fat. Yeah.
You know, you were old by the time you were 40. That was the culture back then. You were middle age. Like 40 was middle age.
Yeah.
You weren't expected to exercise or stay in shape or anything. You were given permission to get old.
Looks like Elvis took the Who's My Generation lyrics literally. It's like, before I get old.
It's the pills and the religion. It just doesn't, it's not a good mix at that point.
Ain't taking no life lessons from some pedophile, man. Oh, I didn't mind that. All right. No Hunter this week. He's just indisposed for this week and maybe back next week. I don't know yet. Go wait and see. So anyway, John and I have been doing the sort of semi-threatened one that I've been talking about, you know, sporadically through episodes, and that is a Mike Hammer episode. But it's actually the first movie. Now, John, you said there was, and clue us in, myself and the listeners, you said there was a first season of this, and then this film we're talking about today, the pilot of the rerun of the second series. What happened in between that with Stacey Keach?
Okay, the series started in 82. There was a TV movie pilot called something like Murder Me, Murder You, and Tanya Roberts was playing Velda. And it was intended to be to launch a series. Then the series launched, I think, about a year later or less than a year later. And Velda was replaced by Lindsay Bloom, or Tanya Roberts was replaced by Lindsay Bloom in the regular series. And Stacey Keach was the star. And it was basically, it was called Mickey Spillane's Mike Hammer. And they had an unusual deal that Jay Bernstein, the producer, had made a deal with Mickey Spillane. He could not get the rights to use the classic Mike Hammer novels like I, the Jury, because they were owned by MGM, because they had made movies in the 50s and had bought the rights back then.
Right.
And so he couldn't do Kiss Me Deadly, couldn't do really do any of the novels. So he basically just bought the rights to use the character Mike Hammer. But he had to call it Mickey Spillane's Mike Hammer. And the irony is, and I remember at the time I was trying to get the Mike Hammer books, the books were not in print. That was the weird thing. Mickey Spillane had been the biggest, I think he was the biggest selling novelist of the 50s and 60s in terms of fiction, and or novelist, and was certainly the most successful mystery novelist. And his books were out of print by the 80s for some reason, even though he was in those Miller Lite commercials. Aired during football games. Mickey was one of the regulars, like with Bubba Smith and Dick Butkus and Rodney Dangerfield and Bob Uecker and all these kind of American sports icons. And there's Mickey Spillane in his detective hat, you know, his fedora, sitting there drinking beer with those guys. So he had become a pop culture icon.
Was that Stacey Keach or was it somebody else portraying Mike Hammer?
It was Mickey Spillane. And
oh, Mickey Spillane. I'm sorry. Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's his way. He was better known for being on those beer ads than creating Mike Hammer and writing the novels. It was really weird. I can't think of any time that's actually happened to a writer.
Right.
So when he basically licensed the Mike Hammer character to Jay Bernstein, they made the series, and I think he had one requirement. He says, don't have Mike Hammer use a 38 caliber pistol because it's a sissy gun. He has to use a Colt 45 because, like, in some of the novels, he had Mike Hammer using a 38 and regretted it. I don't know why. It's a weird gun thing. Okay. But anyway, the series ran for about a year and was very moderately successful on Saturday nights, but drew a lot of older male viewers, which were a much coveted audience for CBS on a Saturday night. And but since Stacey Keach ended up getting arrested for cocaine possession in London because he was doing, you know, he was still doing plays and stuff, ever the trained actor, and he ended up being sentenced to, I forget, it was like a few months in a London dungeon basically, and it stalled the series and of course halted production.
Insert Danzig joke here, John.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I can't remember if the show was canceled after he was sentenced or they tried to pick it back up and he made some extra episodes, but the ratings had dropped so much because they had run reruns like crazy. And this will be like a, I don't know if Australians ever had to deal with this, where there was an anticipated show and yet they couldn't produce new episodes, so they just kept rerunning the same seven episodes over and over. It was that sort of scenario. Moonlighting. It happened with Moonlighting in America. When Moonlighting got really popular, they couldn't produce the damn episodes because the two leads, yeah, Bruce Willis, didn't get along with Cybill Shepherd, and the producer-creator was a perfectionist, and they just couldn't get episodes produced. And they just ran the same 12 episodes over and over again and just burned the audience out. So by the time it came back, nobody cared. So then it was canceled. CBS never found a worthy replacement on Saturday nights for it. So they did this TV movie to kind of bring Keach back, I think, after the whole London incident and bring the character back. And Ray Danton directed it, which is odd because he was a actor dancer, you know, was basically a Warner Brothers contract guy back in the 60s. and had played Derek Flint in the TV pilot, The Hunter, and I had mentioned on the Our Man Flint episode. Mm-hmm. And this ran as a 2-hour slot, and I remember the ads. CBS, you know, pumped it up a lot in the advertising because they wanted to bring the show back. They wanted to get that Saturday night show back. And it did it because I think they did one follow up TV movie to see if the ratings were still there, if the audience would stick with them. And then they brought the series back full time and it ran for about a year, but was never quite the ratings hit it had been in 83.
Okay.
And I noticed that the follow up series, because we should say this follow up series, of Mickey Spillane's Mike Hammer, was only released on DVD in Australia.
Yeah, not
and Australia has an exclusive on it, and the distributor, JB Hi-Fi, even said not released anywhere else in the world, which is true. Mm-hmm. These are legit episodes, and this TV movie happened to be a bonus feature on the set, which is a great relief.
Yeah, very very good.
Yeah,
but yeah, so that's what happened. Then the second series kicked up again with this return movie that we're talking about today, which is called The Return of Mickey Spillane's Mike Hammer from 1986.
Yep.
Starring all the same cast again. Stacey Keach, Lindsay Bloom, yep. Don Stroud.
Mm-hmm. Kent Williams.
Oh, yes, yes.
You had some of the regulars at the Light and Easy Bar, which was created for the show. Where they have his guy Ozzy, who's the sports nerd that he goes to for information, you know, because back then you couldn't have detectives like they do on television today, where they just go on the internet and go on the dark web and find all the info they need to move the plot along. So you have the guy at the bar who knows everything, you know.
Yep.
But, Stacey, remember? And have you ever seen Police Squad?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's like where Frank Drebin would go to a shoe shine guy, and that guy knew everything. And that character exists in like every police show, is like just to move the plot along.
Oh, okay then. Yeah, but who was the woman who played the barmaid at the Light and Easy?
Oh, I can't remember. I don't have her credit. I don't remember if she was in the original series, because the original series has never been issued on video, like ever. It was rerun on the A&E network in the U.S. in the early 90s or late 80s, and that's the last time anybody's seen it.
Yeah, I did contact this company that. In Australia here via Vision, who's actually just here in Melbourne, who put out this new Mike Hammer series, is what the one you're looking for that John's talking about. It's called the new Mike Hammer, the box set. If they had any plans to release the first one, they said none at the moment, but you never know. So hopefully, if this one is a half-decent seller, they may see if they can just sort of go back and secure the rights for the first one. Because as you were saying, I think on one of the previous episodes, or maybe in a conversation to myself, these wouldn't have been very expensive for them to acquire,
right?
To put out, it wouldn't have been, you know, something that would have, you know, cost them an arm and a leg to, and a bunch of headache to get out there. But yeah, so this is the one we're talking about, Return of Mickey Spillane's Mike Hammer, starring the above people.
I do need to clarify something though, yes. Because if our listeners go to Amazon Prime, I think they offer streaming for, I think it's called Mike Hammer Private Eye or the new Mike Hammer Private Eye. That is actually a 90s syndicated version that Stacey Keach did as a sequel to this installment. In the mid-90s, it was done on syndication very cheaply. A lot of episodes were directed by Graydon Clark, who gave us Black Shampoo and Without Warning, and is and a much cheaper spinoff. And Velda is played by Shannon Worry, the erotic movie goddess.
Yeah, the Out for Justice.
Yeah, the nipples, you get the telephone.
Yeah. The ones that probably she'll be putting a Me Too hashtag out about Seagal for.
Yeah, where's that? I think she dated Greg Clark. I would have figured she'd come out with something. But yeah, that's a third in reincarnation of the Stacey Keach Mike Hammer.
Yeah. What the fuck happened to Seagal? He looks like a Fu Manchu these days.
He's old. He's old and got way out of shape too quick, and apparently they're still willing to pay him money to appear in movies and star in films.
Wonder if he's still a lawman in New Orleans.
I haven't heard anything, not since the there was a lawsuit And I think there was a lawsuit with rape and enslavement charges, but it was one of those weird things where the woman was hired. She claims it happened to her, and then she went back the next day, and she kept going back, and then she was fired, and then she filed the charges.
This happened. Anyway, fuck Seagal. Don't worry about him. Anyway, so this film stars the above people that we mentioned. Lauren Hutton, who was half decent in this, and also stars... Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, John and Tony Podesta as the child smugglers. I had to throw that one in there. But anyway, so the plot is, John, help us out, because I've not had much sleep.
Okay, it was a confusing plot, but it opens with kidnapping of a child in New York. And the it's like a mime or whatever is used. And it's weird. And then, so the girl is kidnapped, and then... there's an attempted kidnapping of a similar-looking girl who's the daughter of a movie actress who has hired Mike Hammer to protect her and her daughter from a kidnapping. Mm. And it turns out it ties in with a child sling ring run by these Vietnam vets that all have, like, matching tattoos.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of stick together, and we're running a child kidnapping ring and ransom, and they do kidnap Lauren Hutton's daughter and hold her for ransom for like half a mil or whatever.
Half a million, yeah.
Yeah. And then there's a whole setup with the child's father and using the girl kidnapped in the pre-credits. I mean, it's a pretty jumbled plot.
It's like one or two ingredients in the stew a bit too much, isn't it?
Yeah, and this had something like two or three writers work on it, and I don't know if they were just trying to combine plots, but it is interesting that it uses the Psycho Squad of Vietnam Vets cliche out of Lethal Weapon and you know, Mark Olden novels and other stuff.
The A-Team went rogue.
The A-Team went rogue, or the, you know, we swore we'd stick together and come back to the U.S. and commit crimes together with our deadly skills learned in Nam.
I definitely got a First Blood / Rambo flavor in this one.
Yeah.
You know, the Vietnam vets and what.
Yeah, and it was also, I think it was inspired by Lethal Weapon, because they had the mercs who were all in Vietnam. They were in the Black Company in Vietnam.
This was done before Lethal Weapon, wasn't it? A few years.
I think it was. It may have been done at the same time. Well, see, it was done... I first saw it in a suspense novel written by Mark Olden, published in, I think, 1981, called Geary, and that had a squad of Vietnam veterans who were then working as drug smugglers and smuggling in body. They were smuggling the heroin and the corpses of the GI, you know, the dead soldiers coming back, which was later actually turned out to be based on reality, based on the American Gangster storyline that was in the Ridley Scott film, and that was all real. So it was. They were sort of using that cliche. Funny, one of the vets is played by Mike Preston of The Road Warrior, the Australian actor.
The non-speaking Mike Preston. I wondered about that when I was watching. I thought, is he legally allowed to have any lines in this film? Maybe he didn't have a SAG card or something. I don't know, but he had no lines.
Sure, it's like they hired him just for his look. They just needed him to look scary, which he's pretty good at doing. He's got a sharp look for TV, like a TV villain, you know.
Oh, he was in that film. Was it Metal Storm or
Destruction of Jared Sin? Yes.
Yeah, yes. I think it was the year earlier, so he may have got the gig off that, but no lines. Odd.
I wonder if they were scared his accent would come through. But yeah, it's like Australians sent troops to Vietnam. Australia was an ally in Vietnam.
Oh, they were, yeah. I understand that, but it would seem a tad far-fetched to have an Australian Vietnam vet over there. And,
you know. Yeah, I guess it would throw off the casual viewer that learns about Vietnam.
What's he say? What'd he say? Yeah, turn it off. They didn't want that, so just shut up. Just don't say nothing.
But or they cut his lines or something. I think they just got him because of his look or whatever. Or just saying it's Mike Preston from The Road Warrior.
Yeah. Yep. But that's about it. That's the story. It's kind of like a spin on the end of it, like a sort of, you know, sympathy for the vets thing that they weren't doing it to harm children. It's like,
because Hammer has the Nam flashbacks himself, although they luckily did not depict them. But they have him talking about being in the mud.
Yeah.
And You know, and the dark look on Stacy Keach's face when he's talking about it and how, you know, horrible it was and stuff. And but then they have some weird stuff, like when he goes to L.A., they do this kind of Beverly Hills Cop editing or something.
Yeah, they do.
And yeah. Have the cruising down Wilshire Boulevard sort of thing, looking at the weird L.A. people and stuff that you is just a cliche of any movie where they go to Los Angeles.
What was the thing with the sunglasses when he put them on in the office and he had like these visions on the sunglasses?
It was an MTV visual. It was straight out of like a Randy Newman's I Love L.A. or something. It was that was a common music video visual, was put on the sunglasses and then you see – you know, like Beverly Hills signs or whatever in the sunglasses, because to show that they're going to California.
Like something out of a Dire Straits video.
Yeah, which is funny because it's like what I noticed was they did a lot of location work in New York, like real location work in New York and also in Los Angeles. Yeah. And I think the bulk of the series is always filmed in Hollywood on backlots and such. But yeah, this had a lot of New York location work. Which is interesting. But then you have the celebrity cameos because he's on a movie set. So there's Bruce Boxleitner playing himself and Mickey Rooney playing like a sleazy producer agent.
Oh, my God. That woman who comes up to Mickey Rooney and says, oh, I want to be famous. Oh, my God. I don't know who she is.
I think that might have been Ken Wall's. I was thinking that might have been Ken Wall's wife, Corrine Alphen, who was a Penthouse Pet of the Year.
Oh,
but
my goodness.
She might have been another one of the girls and somewhere else in the movie.
What is it about Ken Wall? What have women seen this guy?
You know, before his motorcycle accident, he was like probably the most handsome guy in Hollywood. He's when they just threw themselves. And, he was actually very gruff and tough guy acting, and I think actually straight, so that probably helps.
Yeah. Probably does help, you know? Yes.
Yeah. So, but he married her, and she took him to the cleaners in the divorce. It's pretty ugly.
Oh,
so,
is that the one who was one of the Barbie twins, her?
No, what happened was he was messing around, I think, with Rodney Dangerfield's wife and got into a motorcycle accident or fell down some stairs. I forget. It's a pretty dark story. But and then when he was rehabbing, he took up with, I think, both of the Barbie twins.
God.
Yeah. And then he's currently married to one of them. And he's, you know.
Yeah. Don't mind if you share one of the other ones. Are you, Ken? It'd be nice. You have to have fucking both yourself. But, greedy twat.
But yeah, he had it. He had something. And, just career didn't quite, I guess he was what they call, difficult, I guess, on the wise guy set. Like he was smart though. He buddied up with the actors or not the actors, but the writers, like, and got a lot of influence on the script writing of Wise Guy. But, of course, butted heads with producers and that was kind of the end of that show.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. So there's a whole bunch of cameos in there as well. You see the other cameo in there, but not by a person?
Oh, I can't remember now.
Trump Tower.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't think we called it that back then, though.
Well, that's what was on the fucking sign on the front, Trump Tower.
It's just, it wasn't like a known thing back in those days. But yeah, Trump Tower, because I keep hearing about Trump Tower because of Home Alone 2. Because my son keeps watching that. So, yeah. And I guess the kid stays in Trump Towers.
Must have. But, sitting there watching wrestling and eating cheeseburgers and heroin, right?
the whole thing with that was odd.
Yeah. All right. But the question I have for you was, do you think anybody else could have played Mike Hammer as good as Stacy Keach?
If you mean...
And if so, who could?
Oh, gosh. In the 80s?
Yeah.
I can't, no actor jumps to mind, for the 19. I mean, Armand Asante played him in the Eye of the Jury movie, which it's funny was released around the time, the first Stacy Keach TV movie went into production. So I think they knew that wasn't going to be a hit. Armand Asante, I thought was actually okay in that film.
But Armand Asante doesn't have that gumshoe look about him like Stacy Keach.
Yeah, he was different. He played him differently. I mean, every actor has played Mike Hammer completely different. Ralph Meeker in Kiss Me Deadly, which is the big 50s classic that's on Criterion, that he plays the character differently. And I think the guy, I forget the actor who played him in Eye of the Jury, the 1950s 3D version, He probably plays him differently. Darren McGavin played him differently on the 50s My Camera TV show, but it was a very acceptable version of it.
Right.
Yeah, Mickey Spillane probably played the truest My Camera. He played his own character in The Girl Hunters, which is actually a pretty fun movie.
Oh, I've never heard
the
of
British
it.
British production from the 60s with Shirley Eaton, who you remember from Goldfinger. And,
oh, yeah, sure.
That's actually a really violent film for the time and very watchable. And Mickey's not bad at all. Playing his own character. Now, in the 1990s, I thought Michael Madsen should have been put in a series of My Camera movies, like, right away.
Yeah, it could have been, but he mumbles a lot. If you can get over that.
It's like he had a tendency to get out of shape, make it a little too obvious. He was drinking, and, he just obviously signed and do any movie for the money, and he just kind of pissed away his career. But I thought he could have been a Mitchum for the 1990s, and they kind of missed the boat on that.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so.
I'd have cast Michael Madsen like in a remake of Kiss Me Deadly, or just actually doing a film version of One Lonely Night. See, it's funny because James Ellroy had told me that he had a meeting at 20th Century Fox, and they actually asked him, they go, "What is your dream project if we gave you a blank check? Right. And what would you love to write?" And he goes, "I want to do Mickey Spillane's My Camera without irony, without camp, and just do One Lonely Night the way it's written, and at the end he's machine gunning the commies." And he says, needless to say, they did not. They were like, "Thank you very much."
Yeah. It's like, so, we'll take a pass on that one. Thanks, hey, Jones.
But Stacy Keach, it's funny, he's not really the Hammer of the novels, but just in the same way Sean Connery is not the James Bond of the books. And it's just, but he's the perfect Mike Hammer for television. The mustache. I don't know how he does it. It's hard to do the mustache and look, you know, not campy doing it, or not unintentionally funny.
Yeah.
Stacy Keach looks great as my camera in the duds and everything. He looks like a man out of time, you know, a man who's still of the 1950s walking around in 1980s New York and LA.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. What do you think of the performances in this film? I really enjoyed it. I mean, I enjoyed this film on a whole, but I thought Lauren Hutton was very good.
It's not really a false note because it's like, even though there's campy stuff in it, with, like, you know, the penthouse pets and the Playboy bunnies walking by and saying one-liners to him and stuff.
Yeah.
Like it's a Roger Moore James Bond movie. It's like, even though it has those jokes and everything, it's still played very straight. And the actors do it straight. So it's done without, like, a sense of, like, they're making fun of the material. And I think it's pretty solid. Like, it's serious when it needs to be. It's fun when it needs to be. And this is the way a TV movie, you know, from that era would be. It's just like, let's have fun with this, but let's also, when the violence happens, the violence needs to be serious. And it actually, the violence is never played for laughs. And the stunt work in some scenes is really exceptional.
Why is it you think, this came to me as I was watching the film, I thought, why is it we never see these sorts of films on TV anymore?
Every time, I don't really watch current television much, or fictional TV, and I've noticed, like, anytime I see an ad for a cop show, it's either NCIS or CSI type thing. Oh, so they're just doing that formula when beating it to death, and or it's a cop show where the lead is a female inspector or female, like they did the American version of Prime Suspect that nobody watched. It's like they don't want to do like a tough guy gumshoe show where he's like a private eye and, you know, he's macking on the ladies and getting shootouts and fist fights. Like they don't, it's like they're scared to do a show like that nowadays.
Well, they've been going through their whole virtual signaling fucking list that they've got of things that Mike Hammer couldn't do. So basically he'd become redundant and they wouldn't do it.
Well, you know, if you look back at the, if you look back at the origins of Mickey Spillane's success with Eye of the Jury, like that book sold like crazy. I think it came out in the late 40s. And that book, a lot of people have tried to analyze what the success was. And it's like Mickey had been in World War II. Most of his readers had been in World War II. And the truth is about World War II is a lot of men served, not all of them saw combat. So, but there was a sense of reality of coming back and seeing your buddy shot or whatever. And so he Mickey Spillane took that Raymond Chandler Dashiell Hammett formula and he brought sex and graphic violence to it. And that was really appealing to veterans of World War II. And, you know, that was the good war. That was the greatest generation. That was the war we were proud to win. And then, you know, post-Vietnam, I think there was just some sort of – there's that weird backlash, and you now see it these days when they talk about toxic masculinity and all this nonsense. And it's like there's this kind of refusal to embrace that kind of let's appeal to men. You know what I mean? It's like let's have sexy girls and action and violence and a mystery and everything. And but he's a good guy. You know, he's a good guy, good tough guy with a code.
Yeah.
You know, he's a super – he's got a code. He's not like a bad guy at heart or whatever. He's got a code of honor. And it's like there, I don't see that in TV or movies much these days at all.
No.
Yeah, I guess John Wick, but John Wick is kind of campy and cartoonish with it. As good as the action scenes are, they don't really want to get into the character's head at all. So,
yeah.
You know, it's that sort of thing. It's like they, I don't know if writers today, because you know, a lot of this stuff back in the, even up to 80s television, that was written by World War II vets or guys who'd served in Vietnam. It's like there's nothing like that today of writers. I don't think any of these writers have ever been in a fist fight. I don't, you know, it's like I think they're these neurotic nerds writing these kind of things that they just learn about this stuff from books or movies. They don't really, you know, I don't know if they know how to create
social
that type
justice
of
warriors can go fuck themselves.
Exactly. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, M.
Thank you, M.
But you know, it's just I've noticed that's an overall thing. You don't see stuff like the 1970s Charles Bronson movies in theaters anymore, or the Clint Eastwood movies. You know, Clint Eastwood won't even make those type of films anymore.
No.
Everybody, you know, you would think Clint could create a new tough guy action star finding some protege that he could feature in films. He can't do it anymore, but he could direct stuff like that. He doesn't bother.
Yeah, but it just every time you see something these days that's got, you know, somebody who's like everybody these days is young, you know, in the films is like the Flash is a 25-year-old kid and you know,
15.
If you were to get Mike Hammer, sorry, he'd be no more than 30 these days without a recast. He's just ridiculous, you know. That's not a seasoned PI. It's just a kid with a fucking hat and a, you know, trench coat. That's about it. And
men and the male actors today, they can't, if they're in their 40s, they can't show any mileage on themselves, you know. They can't look like Xboxers or
they're too there's no trodden down look to them. Like you'd never see somebody these days. I mean, while this guy was not an action, the action movies or whatever, or action star, whatever you want to call it, you'd never see somebody these days like Sid James with that look.
No, not at all.
It would
be allowed
never happen.
Camera.
Yeah, he'd be like a viral YouTube video. That's about it.
he'd be like a Sticks and Hammer 666, but he would be like completely elderly, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that could be thinking about the songs of the 80s. I was listening to some 80s station on the radio yesterday as I was taking a hike to pick something up. And I thought, you know, you would never get songs like Pac-Man Fever as a number one hit. You would never get songs like, what's that bloody band called? They did one called There Ain't No Age for Rock and Roll. Was it the Mixters or something?
I don't know. I haven't heard the song.
The song is basically a bunch of old people singing There Ain't No Age for Rock and Roll, but it sounded like an old-time rag sort of tune, and it's just that became a number one hit over here. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't even get a release on a label these days, let alone any sort of coverage on a YouTube channel. It's just, it's just times have changed a bit too much. I feel like a bit like Mike Hammer as well, where times has changed. I feel like, you know who I feel like? I feel like that guy in the movie who's sitting by the cemetery, in the cemetery.
Yeah.
Just like, life just passed me by, man. I'm just going to sit here and just live back in 1981 when I was, you know, a 10-year-old. So.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I kind of, I was laughing, noticing that Mike Hammer looks like a man out of time. And then when he encounters that hippie, who's also, a man out of time, it was kind of a funny thing that I think the writer stuck in there. Mm. But I know there's Hammer episodes where he complains about the music of today or whatever. And, you know, like almost like he stepped out of 1948 and he's in the modern world, and it's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Can't disagree with the character's viewpoint at all.
No, I can't. Like,
culture is really deteriorating in a way. It's into something like I just don't enjoy. Like, I couldn't imagine anybody being, okay, the way I am about, let's say, old Bruce Lee movies or Dirty Harry, is anybody going to be like that 30 years from now about movies released today? And I just don't see it.
They have no attention span, no passion for either.
Yeah, and imagine 30 years from now. And I'm into movies that were not contemporary of my time. It's like I got into the Bruce Lee stuff in the 80s, and Dirty Harry I saw, I think, in 1984. And it's just like that sort of stuff. It's like I don't know if people would discover the movies today 15 years later and be fanatical or really interested in them. It's a weird thing.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, kids these days just don't have an attention span whatsoever. Everything's just about, you know, they want everything condensed in 2 minutes. That's just some bullshit right there. But, yeah, anyway, getting back to this Mike Hammer film, you've seen the other one that was made in 88, the other Mike Hammer film?
No, I haven't watched it yet.
Oh, you haven't seen it. Okay.
Yeah, I watched a couple of the first, the first episode of the series, the new Mike Hammer series. And that was and I was surprised how serious it was, because the original run of the series was a little campy. It was like kind of doing a Roger Moore 007 movie on TV, because those were popular in theaters. And I was surprised how serious they took it. They basically ripped off Laura, the classic film. But
I remember you telling me about that.
It was interesting.
Yeah. But you made a good point before. You told me that this should have been the first thing on the first disc, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it should have been. I don't know why that didn't kick it off, because I think the first episode is too serious and might put a viewer off from really getting into it. And it's not a great the episodes that I've seen so far, the transfers, they didn't remaster these at all. So they're just kind of fresh off the, you know, TV station tapes or whatever, or the vault tapes. And it's not the best quality. But this
one looked good. This one looked really good.
This print looked nice, especially for something aired on CBS, which is always the worst looking of the three networks. And this actually looked pretty good on DVD. And I was like, wow, this should have kicked off the set.
Maybe they thought by putting this on first with such good quality that the sort of minor degradation of the others afterwards would be off-putting to people. But
it's possible, but you're selling to hardcore fans, but I imagine you might have a couple of rookie viewers checking this out for the first time. I would have kicked it off with this. At least this is action-packed and fun and exciting and pretty much what we remember about the old series, if anything.
Yeah. I mean, I remember seeing some of these, I wouldn't say full episodes, but I remember seeing snippets of them on TV back in the late 80s, it would have been. But it was just probably something myself at that time at my age just never had much interest in. But they certainly do familiar, that's for sure.
Yeah,
I didn't see them again until 2013 when they aired on television here on one of the small subsidiary channels at about 3 in the morning on a Saturday night / Sunday morning.
Wow.
Yeah. And I
they really
didn't
pay anything for the license.
No. Yeah, that's what I mean. They were on literally the Insomniac Hour. And just basically played a couple episodes a night. Didn't run, from what I can understand, did not run the first season, only the one we have, because it ran over a 13-week period, which is usually the amount of time they have off from the ratings period. And it ran in the off-season through, you know, January and December and all sort of stuff, and played two a night on the Saturday nights and got through all 22 or 26, whatever it was, over that period, and then disappeared, never came back.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's about it. I mean, it's not much I really talk about. It's only Cliff Notes sort of review of the film. There's not a great deal to it. It's, I mean, I'm glad they've included it in the box. I'm glad they didn't, you know, say, well, we're going to give you the TV shows, but you got to buy these two movies separate on a separate DVD. I'm glad they just shoved them all in there. And put
right.
In the
I
box
should set. Add, there is an American release of the first two pilot TV movies from 1982 and 83, I think. That's a releases a double feature by Sony, and it's Columbia. It's really cheap. You can usually find it on Amazon for about $4. It's totally worth getting. It's got the pilot movie with Tanya Roberts playing Velda.
Oh, nice. I'm going to grab that.
And those are actually really good. Like, they're actually really solid, especially for 1982, solid violent TV movies with Stacy Keach playing Mike Hammer. A lot of people don't realize that before that, there was actually an attempted pilot with a different actor playing Mike Hammer, and he was the guy who was Kojak's sidekick. I'd have to look it up, but it was called Mickey Spillane's Mike Hammer, A Margin for Murder. And it was basically an unsold TV movie pilot made by the same producers. But it is not. I saw it aired on TV. It was rerun. Maybe it was on WTBS or one of those type of stations. And it was not very good. It was not fun to watch. It wasn't anything like the Stacy Keach version. It was okay. Very much like bland late 70s TV cop stuff.
Oh, okay. Yeah, before this, we had also Stacy Keach in Cheech and Chong's Nice Dreams, which is...
Yeah.
Oh, guys. And Up in Smoke as well, but by God, Nice Dreams is terrible.
That's an awful film.
But fucking couldn't get through that movie.
His acting was all over the place in the 70s. Stacy Keach was that kind of reliable actor that I think everybody wanted to work with, but he would pick the weirdest stuff. And I mean, I think we all kind of dig The Ninth Configuration. I'm a big fan of The Dion Brothers, also called The Gravy Train. He made some interesting movies. And but was never like a box office star.
Remember the movie he made with Pia Zadora?
Oh, Butterfly.
Butterfly, yeah. I ran that out on VHS. Cable. Yeah.
Yeah, he would pick the weirdest stuff like that. It just seemed like, I don't know. It seemed like he could have done better, but or he just took what was offered. But he has an interesting career. It's something to look at. It's definitely, he put some thought into it. He did a lot of interesting projects, and he did the Nice Dreams.
And he has a brother out there, James Keach, as well. Married, luckily married to Jane Seymour.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, unless you got anything else, like I said, this is only a basic introduction to the movie that we did watch.
Yeah,
I've got nothing else, man. What rating you got in this?
It's a TV movie. I'm not rating it the same way I rate an actual theatrical film. I rate it on a TV movie level, and I'm doing the Leonard Maltin. So I'm gonna say it would rate above average. So I'd say like a 7 or an 8.
Yeah, I kind of give it an 8. I actually really enjoyed it.
It's a lot of fun. And like I said, there's the stunt man that did that thing off the helicopter. That was, this is for a TV movie. Nowadays, that would be a big hyped up deal in a movie.
Oh yeah,
where he's like, carried off the cliff.
Oh no! Nowadays it'd be CG. It'd be CG now. So
right, it'd be total CGI. It'd be Tom Cruise. His hair waving perfectly in the air and stuff.
Yeah, I know. But, I'll give it an 8 as well. I mean, and I'll say, I'll pop in the show notes where you can buy it. You got to have is it region free? Did you check with this one?
Just have region, I didn't double check, but all my DVD players are region free, so I would say it's a region free. A region free player. You kind of have to these days. The reason is, even if Australian... a lot of Australian DVDs are released zero region, but they don't play perfectly on every American standard DVD player because of the PAL signal, and not all players handle that. But I would definitely make sure you have a region hacked player before you order it.
Oh yes, because region hacked players also put the PAL NTSC signal in there, so there's no gotcha. Yeah, well, we have put before in the Zuckerbot group where to get these region free plays. If you do want to know and you're unsure, just hit us up, and either myself or Hunter or somebody or Johnny might point you in the right direction of where to grab one of these things.
I can say, if you buy any Philips DVD player, look up the model and hack code. Just Google the hack code for that model and it'll come up. All Philips players are hackable.
Even these days? Because my Sony was. I bought a Sony... probably about three, 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And it was hackable. It was perfectly fine. Bought a whole bunch of new Sonys for the house because it got, Netflix and all sort of stuff on them. And got them home, put in a Region 4, worked fine, put in a Region 2. Can't be played back. I said, what? Really? A Region 2 DVD from the UK? So it is pretty much a fucking brick. You can't play anything on them. You can't hack them. I've looked everywhere, so I regret buying. I wish I had bought the bloody $99 Laser brand one, which is where they literally in the box, give you the code, say, hey, punch these numbers in to make the machine region free for Blu-ray and DVD. They don't hide it, and they even put it on their bloody website. So they won't give it to you out of the box like that, but they do tell you, here are the instructions, and it's basically three setups, like three steps, and then bam, bam, put in 8520, I think it is, and you're done. It's region free.
Yeah,
so.
All the Philips are that easy. As long as you Google the model number and the hack code, and it's like you just hit in a couple of numbers and hit power a certain way or eject, and it's boom, you're scot-free. You can play anything from around the world.
Jeez.
You know.
All right, man. Well, I can't think of anything else. We have got some shows lined up that we're going to be doing. Next week's one is going to be, if all on track, well, I won't say what it is, but we have a fair idea what it's going to be. Let's just say it's going to be a sequel to an episode we've already done before in the past.
Yeah.
Or a part two of. You know one we have to get cracking on, John, that we've got to finish?
What's that?
Metal Evolution, the final one.
Oh, God, there's more
we
metal
still got,
to
yeah,
we've
still got four more episodes to watch. So, yeah.
Oh, my gosh, I'll have to send me the links for those.
Yeah, really, I'll have to.
Our sequel 5 years later.
Yeah, it literally will be 5 years later. We did that. That was one of the first ones you did in Feb 13, I think it was.
I think it was the first official one I did.
Yeah, I think no, that was Seven Grandmasters from memory, but
okay,
it was one
it was
of the
second,
first two
it was
or
like
three.
Or third.
Yeah, it was no more than that. So
because I remember I guest appeared on a few, and then my official joining, I think I had to do a metal. It was Metal Mania or whatever the hell it was.
Metal Mania, Metal Evolution. I just said
Metal Evolution. When you know, I was watching them on YouTube, like cramming them before the recording. So I just remember that.
I just remember fucking doing that last one and just being blitzed on 2.5 bottles of red wine. I don't even remember what the fuck I said. I was just.
It might have helped me because I was surprised how little I knew about metal of the last of that era.
But I've got to I think we got to do that one. We will have to I've got Rock Month picked out for myself as well, by the way, at the moment.
Oh really?
Yeah, I do. I'm not going to divulge who it is, but I've already picked mine. So
okay,
yeah.
I was going to suggest Jigsaw because I think there's only one album. So
I thought there was only one song, Sky High. That was it.
I think that's what the album is. It's just Sky High over and over again.
Yeah.
But, I've got the LP. It's actually multiple songs on there, but I need to pull it out and listen.
Yeah. It is a good song, though, Sky High.
Yeah, I was just talking. It's funny. I was in a conversation with Brian Trenchard-Smith on his page about Jigsaw because I made a joke about pulling off the LP. And he goes, you know, they should have been more than a one-hit wonder. I said they were good, but I think they sounded too much like Wings. And some people hear them on the radio and think, oh, that's the latest Wings song.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It does sound a bit like Wings, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or Badfinger. Kind of a little too much in that mode.
Yeah. All right. All right, man. Well, nice short one, this week.
Yep.
Sorry, it is only a short one. That's what she said. Doesn't matter. Anyway. So, yeah, anyway, next week we're back with hopefully all three of us. It'll be nice to have all three of us back. It's becoming rarer and rarer. So
life gets in the way of podcasts. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it does. It's the last 2 weeks is just at my house has just been insane. Just, you know, my older son starting high school, my younger son starting primary school with his other brothers, and it's just, it's been an absolute cluster. And it didn't help the other day when I went to pick him up from school. And he's not at the front, he's not at the back. 35 minutes searching around for him. And he just jumped in the car with another kid and came home. And, oh boy. I fucking...
Oof.
Ugh.
Yeah.
I fucking blew up at him home. Oh. He knew when I got home, I was not happy. He fucking knew straight away.
For anybody who thinks we're just lugs in our parents' basements recording these podcasts, no, not the case at all.
No. Not at all. I'm actually upstairs. I'm not in the basement. I'm a lug who lives upstairs. dining on too much rich food, my friend. It's like, oh, God. Buddy.
Oh, geez. You're watching all these cooking shows. You're watching all these.
That is all I watch. You know, you laugh, but that is all I watch these days. Just
I know. I can tell.
It's like, oh, raspberry coolie. That sounds nice. I might have a crack of that one day, but yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. The Poms have got, no offense to our British listeners, but they seem to think that life is just Dauphinoise potatoes, raspberry coolie is a pudding, And Lamb, that's about it.
Well, I know that when I watch, I'll watch episodes of the Galloping Gourmet or something, that's when the appetite gets big to try different foods and stuff. So I can only imagine if you're watching that stuff all the time,
yeah,
what a mess that can be.
I mean, I just, John, I don't like television, mate. I don't like it.
I don't like it either. Yeah, I don't like, I'd rather watch cooking shows or, you know.
I just look at the state of stuff that's on TV. And I'm not just saying stuff from the UK or the US. Australia's is just as guilty. They got a show here. You ever heard of a show called Gogglebox?
No.
Okay, Gogglebox, believe it or not, is people sitting down on their couches watching TV shows and commentating on it.
Good Lord.
So you're watching a show about people sitting on the couch watching a show. And that apparently is entertainment. I'm like, why the fuck would you get up and watch somebody else commentate on a show when you can watch the same show and do your own commentary if you felt so inclined?
It's like the Mystery Science Theater thing that I don't get, but, you know.
Yeah.
You know, you don't, apparently you don't need your own sarcastic wit. You know, the TV will provide for you.
That's what, when I see shit, I just run to the garage and just go to my cabinet of TV shows and please get me something to, you know.
Right, let's watch Sid James trying to get away with a lie to his wife.
Bless his house, or please give me an incredible, I just grab an Incredible Hulk series off the shelf and just, oh, please get me something. You know,
yeah, because I've been blitzing through Bless His House lately and it's just like every storyline is Sid, he's got football tickets, how's he going to get out of going to that wedding, you know. It's just the goofiest plots.
Yeah. I mean, that's when shows, I mean, okay, look, this is a preface to what we're doing next week. Potentially, we're going to be doing Best of British, I'm watching too many Electric Blue tapes now. Best of British Volume 2 we're going to be doing next week, provided we're all here. Because Hunter does want to do it. That's why we're not doing it this week, me and John. And I was watching stuff like the like Love Thy Neighbours and Mind Your Language and Bless His House and all sort of stuff and thought, you know, these shows are really offensive, but I'm still laughing at them 40 years later.
Yeah.
You know, you got a new show these days where you just sit there and it's like, you just turn to stone and you think, what the fuck is this shit, you know?
Right. Just, well, at least they're actually, like the old shows, they knew how to get a laugh. Nowadays, I don't even think they understand a setup and a punchline.
Nah.
No. You either get a setup and no punchline, or you get a punchline with no setup.
And you get a punchline that's not funny.
You're exactly. Yeah. Constantly. Yeah. And the only people they want to slam is, you know, with the safest targets possible. They're too afraid of offending anybody.
Yeah, let's target white men.
Yeah, it's constant apologetics. It's tiresome, and it's so dishonest. It's completely like when I watch Love Thy Neighbor, I'm stunned how honest that show is. And they'll do things like that sitcoms in America wouldn't even touch. Mm. Like I remember setting up a gang fight between the whites at the bar and the blacks at the bar. Yeah. And that was a 2-part episode. That would have never been done in the US.
Wouldn't have even been a 1-part episode.
It would have been 5 minutes.
Yeah, would have been a non-existent. Would have been, yeah, script straight in the bin sort of episode.
Right, rejected script goes right to the slush pile.
Yep. All right. All right, my friend, we'll call it a day on this one, I think. And we'll see you again next week. And hopefully all three of us back doing the Best of British Part 2. So as usual, I'll imitate Hunter and say adios.
And I'll say Magadoc.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to Stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination.
find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to Facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.